salta me jale, jaleya, uy, cuy, jule, jaleya, uy, cuy, jule.
Welcome to the California Indian Radio Project. This program is Education, the Values in Learning. For almost 100 years, there's been a tug of war in the classrooms of California for the hearts and minds of Indian children. Pitt River author and teacher Daryl Wilson even struggles in his sleep to understand what to do.
I have that dream, not all of the time, but it keeps coming back very vivid. I'm there in this very old house, surrounded by very old people, and all of them somehow expecting me to tell them how to unravel this, I don't know, this thing like a Gordian knot, Americana, wrapped around our tribal people, just wrapped around. How do you untie that knot? They expect that. That dream of going and doing these things, accomplishing in Americana and coming back with solutions or suggestions to solutions. They didn't say you're going to go out there to become a white man if you read a book. That's one of the fallacies and one of the things that we really have to overcome, that barroom language. If you read a book, you become a white man. It's not true. You can read 10 million books and never become a white man. They expected me to read those books and come back and offer them solutions or offer them ideas or talk to them about how to unravel this Gordian knot, Americana, that's tied around us.
California Indians' experience with education falls across 3 generations. Many of our elders are survivors of the federal Indian boarding schools, that organized effort to educate Indians into oblivion. Others of our older generation struggled through public schools, where Indian students were despised or ignored, or moved to urban areas during the relocation years. Those of us now middle-aged rode that great wave of change through the 60s into college. We occupied and protested, and were the first students to enter newly established Native American Studies programs and graduate with degrees and teaching credentials. As our children have progressed through school, we've expected something better for them, and we've worked every way we know how to make the education system meet their needs. In some cases, we've succeeded. In many ways, the knot is tangled as tightly as ever. I'm Joseph Orozco. In the 1920s and 30s, Indian parents were encouraged, even coerced, into sending their children to federal boarding schools. There, the children stayed for months at a time without any contact with their families. School life was rigid and often harsh. Native language and culture was forbidden in the belief that it would hinder the successful assimilation of Indians into the working class. Agnes Feister is a Pomo elder from Mendocino County. As a very little girl, she was sent to Sherman Indian School, far away in Riverside County. After almost 70 years, her memory of that experience is still sharp and painful.
I have no idea. I didn't know how to speak a word of English, so I didn't know how old I was. The first years of being in Sherman, it was horrible. I couldn't speak. When we talk Indian language to my sister, I had sisters there, older. When I talked to them, I talked to them in Indian language, and then the next thing, the matron took me down to the basement and washed my mouth with soap. And then they put me to bed without eating. I don't know what that was for. So that's my Sherman experience. Oh, when I got out, well, I just went on with my dad. My dad came after me, and I went out and grew up in partially in Fort Bragg and on the coast and in Ukiah and start going to school in different places. But we'd never stay one place long time or just go to school here and there. We didn't need no report card. We didn't need nothing. We just go into school. If we feel like going to school, we went. And if they didn't want us, we just got out. And it seemed like nobody wanted the Indian kids outside of being in the government school, and my father said, no more government school. And that's it. Went to the ninth grade, and that's all. Then I start working. So I've been working ever since until I retired, a nurse's aide. If I had furthered my education, I probably would have went a little farther than being a nurse's aide, but I work as a nurse's aide for 31 years, so I did good. I never was on welfare or anything like that. Never received a food stamp in my life. I worked. So that's that. That's my life.
Aside from Sherman Indian School, the Bureau of Indian Affairs has never operated schools for Indian children in California, as they have in many reservation communities in other states. Laws dating from the 1860s excluded Indians from the California public school system, but this prohibition was removed by the legislature in 1921. Since then, the public schools have been grudgingly responsible for the education of Indian children.
My name is Wilbur Augustine. I'm a member of the Robinson Rancheria. I graduated from high school, one of the very few Indian people that graduated from high school at that time. There were little incidences that occurred that had to do with generating a feeling in me of being different than my white counterparts. Some things that the teachers would say, some of the statements they'd make, especially when they got to talking about history. Some of the teasing comments that my fellow students would make regarding Indian people, it had to do with head lice and, you know, that a stereotype that all Indian kids had head lice. It had to do with cleanliness, although my grandmother was really strict on being clean. We didn't live in a uppity house. But what we had, she kept really clean. And that kind of hurt a little bit because that was so far from the truth. They sold us on the idea of getting prepared to make your way in life by, I guess, getting into some sort of trade, mainly carpentry or something of that sort. So we went to the city in the 1960s. We settled in San Francisco for a couple of years. So after doing this testing, the BIA office down there decided that, oh, you could go to electronic school. And when I finished the course, ironically, at that particular time, they were laying off a lot of electronic technicians. And there was no chance for new, just getting out of college students, getting a job. So I ultimately wound up working for the shipyard. We got burned out down there right away. That just wasn't our type of environment, lifestyle. So we decided to come back up here. My wife and I went back into crop harvesting for a while. But it was kind of like a relief, getting out of the stress of city living.
World War II brought California Indians to urban areas to work in the wartime industries. And from the 50s onward, the Bureau of Indian Affairs offered vocational training to natives who relocated from rural reservations. Like the Augustine family, many didn't care for city life, but a lot of native people did stay in the city and they stayed stressed. Change was happening, and it was about time some of it came our way. Jack Forbes, professor emeritus at UC Davis, was teaching then.
Generally speaking, there wasn't a single course that related to Native people. If they did exist, it was a course on Indians of North America taught in the anthropology department. When it came to literature, music, philosophy, whatever, there's nothing to do with the Native people of this hemisphere. Nothing.
My name is Jerry Roybal, and I came to California on a relocation program in 1960 and started my formal education then. It took me 7 years. It was difficult for many people. Many people dropped out because the cultural differences were just too hard for a lot of people to overcome. The hard things, it's one way growing up as an Indian person and then going into a non-Indian institution and trying to function.
Jerry Roybal didn't give up. He eventually received a fellowship too and became a professor at MIT. But the successful effort to establish Native American Studies departments shifted the balance of power in Indian education. At last, there was a way to mitigate the non-Indian bias in education. Jack Forbes.
And, you know, we're still struggling to overcome that. The curriculum in the institutions of the state of California and elsewhere across the country is still just heavily stacked in favor of European studies, white studies. White studies is the biggest ethnic studies programs that exist by far. But nonetheless, we have made progress at UC Davis, and we have our own department. Other campuses have also got good faculty and good programs going. The whole objective, of course, is to be able to train primarily Native people, but also non-Natives, in the history and culture and ideas, philosophy of the indigenous people of this hemisphere. One of our objectives, of course, was to train people who'd go back out and become teachers in the schools.
Pat Augustine was one of the first graduates from the Indian Teacher Educational Personnel Program at Humboldt State University, ITEP, a program that has trained several hundred Native teachers in the past 27 years.
I must have been in my 30s when I started college with five children. I have no idea how I made it through. I have no idea somebody up there liked me. Because I did get through. I got a degree and a credential. But I think I had a lot of support from the Indian Teacher Education Project. And lots of us were not right out of college. We had families and we had jobs and, you know, all those kinds of things and children. So we sort of stuck together. It was new, and the college was very open to us to help us.
We've tried to develop a philosophy of learning, you know, the kind of modern tools that people have to have to survive these days, while at the same time keeping, you know, basic values. And a lot of the modern tools that people have to have nowadays are kind of like a pickup truck. Now, there were some of them are a bit fancier than pickup trucks, a bit more complicated. But basically, it's just like a pickup truck. You learn how to put it together. You learn how to take it apart. You learn how to use it. But you don't let it control you, you know. In other words, you've got to learn so you don't drive 100 miles an hour, you know, on Indian reservation roads. The tool, like the pickup truck or an automobile, can be dangerous if you don't have the values that go along with it. And so that's what we try to do in Native Studies, is to keep people with the values so that they can use whatever kinds of tools they need.
Even Indian teachers in a classroom haven't been able to solve all the problems Indian children experience in school. As in the dream, Americana, wrapped around our people, that knot still waiting to be cut. For 23 years, Marceline Norton has been working to improve education for her people. She is Tribal Education Director for the Hoopa Valley Tribe.
The education today, we see a lot of difficulty that Indian children are experiencing at Hoopa Elementary, for example, over the years. And again, I go back to the early 80s when tribal education started really looking at the test scores, the attendance of Hoopa tribal kids. We have been trying to work with the school system to bring about some improvement in the educational process. As far as the overall performance of Indian children on the Hoopa reservation, it's been pretty dismal. The test scores over the years have been really atrocious, and that's been a difficult thing. I think that we have tried to bring these things out so that parents are aware of where their children are testing, what level in the tests. Basically, the elementary children were scoring in the bottom fourth quartile. The education of our children needs to start with their identity, start with what's familiar to them, what is important to children to learn. For example, when a person becomes 18, a person can vote in the tribal elections. Well, the Hoopa tribe, as well as a number of tribes throughout the country, are faced with some very, very serious issues. With the Hoopa tribe, it may be water, it may be fisheries, it may be other natural resources. Those things are not being taught in the school. That is not a part of the standard curriculum. And on the Hoopa reservation, I believe that that should be a very important part of the curriculum. Yes, it's important to be literate and to be able to function in today's world. But I think a lot of what can be done, especially at the early age, is through cultural values and through the cultural importance that is surrounding the child, where a lot of times schools are very isolated, and a school system cannot be isolated from the culture of the child. What needs to happen within the schools is an enhancement of that child's culture.
And boy, we've got a lot of stuff to take care of. The K-12 curriculum that was just adopted by the state of California is a completely racist curriculum. It's a white man's curriculum. Not even white women, but white man's curriculum. And it is terrible from the point of view of California native people. Now, how are we going to change that? We're only going to change it through political action. That's the way we're going to stop it. But to do that, we've got to have Indian people who care. And that means all the people out around this state who are in all the tribes and, you know, working in all these offices and everything else, if they care about their kids going to school, they ought to do something about it.
Marceline Norton agrees.
Self-identity, self-concept is very, very important for a child to have, because if a child does not feel good about himself or herself, then we see problems arising within the school system. You know, there's not the interest in learning or the motivation.
I think the most harmful thing is that the kids who are of indigenous American ancestry are going to feel that they either don't exist or that they only exist in the third grade, because that's where, you know, California Indians are usually taught about, somewhere around the third or the fourth grade. They get a little of attention. After that, completely forgotten about, no more. So that it is essentially teaching you that you are not really important in this society, that you're peripheral. That's what it teaches.
It was very, very difficult to get the school to open up over the years or to accept the importance of what tribal education saw as a good educational system for its membership.
Bring back the importance of education for Indian people simply because we need that to compete in the next century. And the children are the ones that are going to carry that torch for us.
One Native community has decided that the effort of changing the public school is not the best use of their time and energy. The members of the Rumsey Rancheria have started a tribally operated contract school. Marshall McKay is one of the tribal councilmen that was involved in the decision to start their own school.
We decided as a council that hearing from parents that have kids in the school system in Cape Valley in Yolo County, that the kids were being segregated, the kids were being ignored, the kids were being sort of a continuum of punishment in the school system. So the council decided to research and figure out if it was possible to build a school. And I think the horizons are going to open up for the students. They're going to be given a broader perspective of what they can do. For instance, we are going to teach the Wintun language. Prior to this, there wasn't the incentive for complete family involvement. And now there is. You know, the kids are coming home and they're getting their parents involved with the studies and the stuff they're learning. So it started to get the family back together. It started to bring learning back into the household, and to me that's the educational process that has to take place, the involvement with the student and the parent as well as the community. It's working.
I've been doing it for about 5 years now because it's based on tribal law and it's based on the concept that the tribes of this area had, the Hoopa, Yurok, and Karuk tribes have, of when you hurt somebody's feelings or you do something wrong to somebody else, you make compensation.
On the Hoopa and also on the Yurok Indian Reservation, the time-honored Northwestern California cultural practice of reciprocity, compensating the victim, the insulted, the injured, paying one's debt, admitting transgressions, is being used in new circumstances. Patty Gibbons is a Yurok tribal member who teaches at the Jack Norton Elementary School in the Klamath River village of Pequon. She and some of her fellow teachers are unraveling the knot that binds us.
All right, Steph, will you tell us the whole story?
Tim threw the ball at my legs and I fell down and skinned my knees and ripped my...
The traditional system is based on three principles. All wrongs are between individuals. There is no state. All offenses can be compensated. Several years ago, while teaching at the Hoopa Elementary School, the late Kay Melvin worked with tribal members to adapt those ancient tribal principles to a classroom management system. Called Settle-Up, or Compensation Circle, it is now being used by a number of teachers in the Klamath Trinity School District.
Seth, what would make you happy here?
Point and a half.
Would you be able
Dave
to
Sanders also teaches at the Jack Norton Elementary School.
And during the process of the meetings,
the mediators need some help here because Seth feels
usually the point awards were not very much, and so it really is, it becomes like a symbolic thing more than a, you know, well, you're going to pay me 100 points because you tripped me. It's more like part of it, I think, and the kids catch on to it very quickly and they adopt it, and it's a good way to avoid having to. If kids are coming to you with every little problem, which is something that teachers have to deal with a lot, and you're always having to make the call and settle it for them, then when you do that, nobody's happy with that settlement. So the kids blame you because neither of them is happy with what you said, and you end up feeling not very good about it. And so this is a way of putting the responsibility back onto the children as a community, as a group, as a family, and having them work it out amongst themselves and using words to work it out instead of some kind of physical action.
My name is Adia Gibbons, and I'm in 8th grade, and I'm 13 years old. It works fine for me because the people that are rude to me, they usually apologize, and every once in a while I write people up because they cross the border, and I'm like, you know, I don't like it, and I want you to pay compensation, but I usually don't ask for more than apology because I don't think that points would make me happy.
Little issues, like even something happening on the playground, can open up into a larger issue of where the kids are talking about things like honesty and perception, you know, like when they start realizing that, wow, there's like 25 different views of what happened, you know, instead of just mine. So that it really opens up that level of thinking and understanding for kids.
It makes things easier to where you can't, people just don't flat out just go home with a referral, because then that just doesn't solve anything in compensation. It's to where you let the person that you've done something to, let them know that you really are sorry and that you do want to make compensation, so you know, like in yourself, that they feel better and that they forgive you and that you've been forgiven, and then you feel free of anything that's made you feel bad.
We do talk a lot about current issues. One of the things that crops up fairly often is racism, because we have some students in here who feel like they don't have a real strong Native American connection or background because they don't have papers that prove they're Native American. They don't have the looks that say, yes, I'm Native American. And so they feel like they're kind of always on the outside a little bit. And so we do have a lot of discussions about racism and making sure that everybody respects each other for who they are, for what they believe in, and for where they come from. And one of the reasons that that kind of jumps back to tribal law is that when feelings get hurt, you know, we look at a lot of people had to make payments to other tribal members a long time ago because of hurt feelings. And I know that had happened just recently at one of the dances at Pequon, with somebody's feelings had gotten hurt inadvertently. And so the dance family had to make a payment to them. And so when we talk about it in terms of a classroom, it's the same thing. And I can say, you know, look, I know this happens because it happened just not too long ago in this community. So if you're hurting somebody's feelings, whether it's about how they look or what their background is or what you perceive their background to be, you still need to make payment because that's the way it works here. And it is based on tribal law.
The struggle for the hearts and minds of Indian children caused the knot, Americana, wrapped around us, to tighten with every progressive year. As Native educators revisit traditional values and work to build strong self-identity in their students, the young are discovering the values in learning.
I think that's really an important lesson for the kids. And so when they start connecting, if they can understand that this is my culture, you know, this is something that came from long, long ago, and it's a really great way to work things out so that people can get along together, that affirms, you know, the self-esteem and valuing oneself and valuing history and all those things.
So I think that the compensation circle and the way it's based on tribal law helps all of us to be more successful because it is based on local tribes, and the students here are really proud of their Native American background and their heritage, and so it makes them feel good to be participating in this program, which is based on their own tradition and culture.
Perhaps this is an example of what his elders have been trying to tell Darryl Wilson in his dreams, the kind of solution that will finally cut the knot. So we will see.
Wave after wave after wave of children who are going to be scholars, who are going to be PhD, who are going to have their opinions, their thoughts, their publications, their dreams out there, their dreams realized, but also reaching back and getting hold of a little hand with little fingers on it, and bringing them here and putting them one rung higher than they are, to encourage them one step more to cause a greater greatness for our people.
Education, the values in learning. This program was written and produced by Joseph Orozco and David Tripp. Series executive producer, Peggy Berryhill. Project director, Roby Cook. Digital editing and mixing, Neil Harvey. Thanks to Darryl Wilson for the story of his dream, which opens and closes this program. Thanks to Melody Carpenter for the use of her flower dance song, and to Keyshawn Lara for singing it. Thanks also to the group Exit, and Michael Stearns and Ron Sunsinger. The music of Kol Jedimo appears in our opening theme. This program is a project of Northern California Cultural Communications, with funds provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. For the California Indian Radio Project, I'm Neil Harvey.
To order a cassette tape of this program or a resource guide with more information about the people and topics we've covered, call 1-800-461-3991. That's 1-800-461-3991. Or visit our website at flickerfeather.org.
This program is distributed by the American Indian Radio on satellite, a service of Native American Public Telecommunications. On